to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFO Undercover. Like Natasha said, I am your host, Joe Montaldo. I hope everyone is having a great time wherever they are on our beautiful blue planet. I know I don't get to see everybody enough now that we only do a show once a week, but I thank everyone tuning in. Tonight's guest is going to be Melinda Leslie, which I count her as a friend of ours, not just as a researcher, but as a friend. And Melinda and I have some things we talk about, especially when it comes to government involvement with alien abduction. I will just say abduction because it's not alien when the government's involved. But Melinda, let me get you to come on, tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and we'll start from there.
Okay. Well, how much of my background do you want me to give?
Oh, spill it out there, girl. Because look, I know a good chunk of this audience should know you because you've been on my show a few times.
Sure.
But for the newbies out there, we need to let them know.
Yeah.
Give them a little background so they know what the hell we're talking about.
Well, as you said, I'm a researcher in the field. I'm an abductee who's gone public with her experiences. I've been public for about 18 years with my own abduction experiences. I've been researching what I call the covert ops, you know, intelligence and military involvement in abductions for about 15 years, and have interviewed extensively probably over 50 people, over 40 experiencers, and then the major researchers in the field about their cases of this kind of research, or this part of the part of their research that matches mine, or, you know, is along the same subject matter. And I speak at conferences, and I've been written about in books. In fact, I should probably tell your listeners that a book was written that is, I helped write the whole thing. My name's not on the cover, but I'm on every other page inside. The author of it is Randy Kopang, and some of your listeners may remember that he and I were once on your show together. So the title of the book is Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure. That's its title. Again, that's Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure, and a subtitle of Deconstructing a Cover-Up of the Extraterrestrial Presence by Randy Kopang. Randy Kopang. Kopang is K-O-P-P-A-N-G.
Speaking of which, I'm having to get my autographed copy. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, have I not given you one? Shame on us. Shame on us. I had to talk to Randy. That was just an oversight, because we definitely want to give you one.
I interrupt a perfectly good intro.
No, you're right. Shame on us. We should have given you one. Shame.
No, actually, I like to pick on Melinda because I'm very comfortable with her research and a lot of what she does, and she's one of the few people besides myself and one or two other ICAR members and maybe one other person that you follow see that will broach this subject we're going to be discussing tonight. To be honest with you,
unfortunately, that's true.
It is. It's bad enough that alien abduction is still taboo in ufology, but
is. I have a couple things I want to address regarding that very thing tonight.
Well, you know it's an open floor here, so you can feel free to wherever you want to go. Oh, and ladies and gentlemen, if y'all hear me just shut up, it's because my tooth started hurting again. I already told Melinda about it. And if I get a little giddy late, that's because I took too many pains. We'll get that out the way. I'll turn into Rush Limbaugh tonight.
As I told Joe right before going on the air, I said, don't worry. I can talk a blue streak.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, I want to welcome everyone from New Orleans on UPRN 105.3. That's our new call numbers now. We were at 10.58. They actually made us legitimate and put us in the three-digit now in the odd numbers, which means we're a legitimate station. Also, to our Upsnap listeners, I hope y'all are enjoying the show via your telephone. If you want to listen to us on your telephone, I know a lot of y'all complain that you want to listen to us in your car. Well, now you can. Flip up your cell phone, type in PARA 27627, bam, hit the button, and whoop, turn on your speakerphone, plug in your headset, and you can listen while you're driving. So it's easy to get us now. No excuse not to listen to us anymore. We are looking at some alternative radio stations, actually other AM and FM stations outside that will be carrying a select group of shows from the network. And when I know what they are, I'll let y'all know sometime in the next couple of weeks. Now, you know, Melinda, I know when we talk about Mill Labs, My Labs. Oh, by the way, y'all gonna might as well get used to this, because I'm going to go back and forth between the Mill Lab and My Lab word all night long. So y'all just get ready for that. But when we're discussing this, you know, it's one thing when we're talking about aliens coming and taking people, you know, and we can't do anything about it, we can't stop it. It's a whole other ball game when our own government's coming. It'd be another thing if it was the Russians coming and do it, or the Japanese or Chinese or whoever. But when it's your own United States government coming in and removing United States citizens, basically doing whatever they feel like doing, Which we'll get into later, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically to somewhat reprogramming you sometimes not to remember it, sometimes to think it was an alien abduction, sometimes to think it was something entirely different. What made you decide that you wanted to even get involved with this?
Oh, goodness. Oh, that's a loaded question. First off, let's clarify for the listeners who are like, what the hell was he just talking about? pardon my language.
Okay.
First off, the term MILAB, or MILABS, as you said, is M-I-L-A-B-S. It's an acronym coined by one particular abductee, mm-hmm. Alien abduction experiencer, by the name of Katarina Wilson.
Yep.
And it's an acronym that means military, M-I-L, and A-B-S, abduction. So it means military abduction. And she wrote some papers where this term was included, and then wrote a book called Alien Jigsaw,
yep,
by Katarina Wilson, where she talked about it quite extensively. And then an Austrian researcher who's now fairly well known in the field by the name of Helmut Lammer wrote a book where he used the term that Katarina coined and titled his book that. So that's why this subject has taken on this acronym, because it's an easy way to just say, MILABS, as opposed to saying military involvement or covert intelligence involvement or special ops involvement and so it kind of takes the explanation out of it. Although I'm actually kind of pushing for a new term that I think is more accurate and gets out of the kind of the negative stereotype of it being military, because it's more than military. It's really more of a covert ops aspect or shadow government aspect. And so when you were saying, U.S. government abducting its own citizens, well, certainly in this day and age politically, we know that goes on regardless
oh, yeah.
of, a void of the alien subject altogether. But in regards to this subject matter, I think it puts it so much in the context of military and, as you just said, this U.S. government abducting its own kind of thing, that I don't think is necessarily an accurate description anymore. So this is kind of one of the new directions in my research, if you will. And I realize, MILABS has been around for a while. It's a catchphrase. A lot of people in the UFO field are familiar with it. So, okay, I'll run with it. But I'm going to also, every time someone mentions it, kind of quickly say that what I'm calling it is rehab. So actually, an abductee in the field who kind of long story short, someone who puts out a major magazine on the subject wanting me to write an article for her. And that article is going to be called Rehabs, Not MILABS. And Rehabs being, it's kind of not necessary to put another acronym on it, but Rehabs being the two-part thing. One is Rehabs, as in re-abduction, okay, that's one. And the other is what I'm calling REABs. Actually, what I'm referring to is reverse-engineered abductees.
Yeah, which...
That's what the program is really about.
Which, by the way, I want you to know that reverse-engineer abductee thing has gotten me in more trouble because of you. Ladies and gentlemen, we had a show. This was a while back we did the show, and we got to talking about this on the air. Well, I got to talking. Stupid Joe decided to talk to some of his fellow researchers, and I'm talking big-name ufologists. I'm not going to mention names, but... Oh, Lord, I'm still catching flack for it. I'm like, look, guys, it ain't even my theory. I said, even though I personally agree with her, it's not even my theory. I said, it makes perfect sense to me that the government would want to do this. I said, mm-hmm. basically, they're backwards engineering contactees to get information. And there you go. More than just information.
Why did they have a problem with it? What was their problem?
I honestly, they were just griping in all directions, but I think... To be totally truthful with you, it scared the hell out of them.
Yeah.
I really, because the reactions I got, with the exception of Richard Dolan, he didn't give me any reaction like that.
Richard's a buddy of mine. And
yeah, Richard's a little more open-minded, too. He really, reaches out and looks. And Grant Cameron, by the way, didn't give me a hard time about it.
Yeah, Grant, too. Well, there's a lot, I'm friends with, most major researchers in this field. And most, most all of them support my research. It could just be a knee-jerk reaction to the term because it puts it in the same realm of reverse engineering, which all they all bow down to, and suddenly to address abductions in that same context, I could see why that, you know, that it'd be reactionary, why they would have a difficult time with that. But that's the whole reason why I'm purposefully doing that. It's because it needs to be brought into that discussion.
Oh, and by the way, it sent Nori into a tizzy because I brought it up on his show.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I was plugging you. look, when I get anytime I get on TV shows and stuff like that, you can ask my national director D.
Thank you for plugging me on Nori, man.
Oh, look, I plug her. I plugged you. I plugged my national director D because she's doing a lot of work and doesn't get near enough credit for what the hell she's doing in the field herself. So I'm on it these days because the people who are doing the good work, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that are really the hands off kind of scary stuff, the ones that are getting solid explanations and answers,
mm-hmm.
aren't getting the credit they should be.
That's true.
Okay, and, you know, I'm to the point now where, look, I told people all the time, it doesn't matter if they give me credit or not, because all of my goal was ever to do is to help change ufology, and we've been making dents at least in that. So I'm happy, but I got a lot of people who work hard for me. I'm friends with a lot of, like, Farrah, you know, and a few others, mm-hmm. Yvonne. You know, the first time I met Yvonne Smith, she was like, I'll never get in this. She did the show, and now she's all over the place. But
yeah.
And you know, and a friend of hers called and asked me if I'd put her on, because nobody...
Yvonne's a dear friend of mine.
Yeah, and... You know, you know who I'm talking about. Her friend called me and asked me to put her on because she was having a hard time getting on any shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed as soon as we did, then Kevin Smith picked her up, then Coast to Coast picked her up, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, she got going. And once she got going, she's good enough to get out there herself. And, you know, Yvonne does a lot of work that I'm interested in, you know, because she deals with
abductees. Well, and actually, I've now been, long story short, she lived in the L.A. area
mm-hmm.
and moved down kind of South Orange County, North San Diego County area, and brought her CERO, Close Encounter Resource Organization, support group meetings to this area. Well, I've now been going to them, and I'm just thrilled because it's she runs a very good support group and a place for experiencers. Because, you know, even though I'm out there doing this as a researcher, I'm out there talking about it, I'm public with my experiences, I have people come to me all the time and call me and are referred to me, this kind of thing, and yet I still have my own difficulty dealing with my own experiences. And I can say this for anyone out there that's an experiencer. No one's going to like my saying this either, but you know what? And you can probably agree with this, maybe not, but it never gets easier.
No, not really.
I mean, it gets more comfortable to talk about it because you kind of... You get calloused, and you know,
yeah, you get
where you
don't
care
you
what
get
people
used
say.
To it. It's like anything else. It's like being a hostage and being beat on all day.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, you get used to it, and you incorporate it in your life because
yeah.
you don't have a choice.
But I mean, as far as like coming to terms with this is me, this is happening, the reality of it, the integrating it into your other quote normal life, you know, it, for me, it never really gets easier. And then put in a position where not only do I have to deal with helping other people, you know, but those helping other people brings up my own stuff.
Yeah.
And so I find that going to a support group or someplace where I can, you know, talk about my own issues and not necessarily sit there like, okay, I'm a researcher, I'm here gathering, so, you know, I can never completely take that hat off, but I can, you know, shelve it temporarily because I'm there because I need it. And to have a place where I can, because I'm dealing with this constantly and helping others, a place where I can vent my frustrations with that.
That's a good thing.
You know, you want to be, I'm sure you know, because you're probably in the same boat, you want to be strong and be there for others, but, you know, you still have your own stuff to deal with, and it just makes you have to confront your own issues that much more.
You know, it's interesting you brought that up, because in all the years I've been doing this, you know, because people dump a lot of stuff on me, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I don't mind for all the listeners that I'm friends and contactees that are listening. I really don't mind, but until I was in Laughlin, I met this lady in Laughlin. She's a shaman, and we were talking at the bar, and she said, you know, Joe, she said, I've been watching the conference. Everybody and their mom is telling you all kinds of stuff, including the other ufologists. She said, but I don't hear you dumping any of yours. I said, well, I don't need to. I got other friends, including a wife, that will listen to me for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And thank God for that, because
yeah,
by now I'd probably be insane. But it did kind of catch me off guard because, you know, there was somebody who was actually paying attention and realized, well, wait, he's a contactee, too. You know, and it that's like, oh, you should have seen when Stephen Bessette found out I was a contactee. That was funny as hell.
Yeah.
Oh, we were talking live, and he said, Joe, somebody told me you're a contactee. Is that true? I said, Stephen, you've done like 14 interviews
yeah.
with me.
And you didn't know that?
And he's like, no, I didn't. I was cracking up a little. I couldn't help it. But.
Well, you know, he's kind of funny too.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve Bassett, I know him quite well, of course, and kind of being someone that has a take as a researcher of the subject and trying to bring about disclosure, and I applaud everything he's doing, but at the same time, not having the experiences himself, it's kind of still wrapping his head around that. And when he talks to people that have had that, and with me, it's kind of like there's the part of him that says, okay, this is Melinda the researcher, and she's doing this great research in this area, and you know, he's so supportive, and he asks me questions and stuff about it, and I can tell that part of him that goes, and this has happened to you, you know, that slows through the computing process. You know?
I got to say, he paid me a good compliment. He said, well, you redefine contactees and abductees. He said it on the air, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, yeah, why? Because I'm not crazy and making outrageous claims. I said, Stephen, just because a contactee sounds like they're crazy don't necessarily mean. I said, everybody copes in their own way.
That's right.
You know, and getting right with your talk back, you know, I was working on a case just recently where it happens to be a military abduction. Now, she is a contactee,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I had warned her in the past that sometimes contactees, usually 1 in 100, it's hard to put a number on this, but somewhere in this mess, it's not every contactee, it's probably 1 out of 10 or 1 out of every 100, but, you know, I warned her that it is a possibility, especially since she lives in Gulf Breeze.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, boo, you're like in a hub down there. I said, it's sooner or later, if you're there, they're going to probably get you. Well, they did.
Mm-hmm.
And at first she tried to say it was this, and she tried to say it was that, and then she tried to blame it on the aliens, because it was, at this particular time, there was a gray, which is not unheard of.
Boy, can I address, just a moment, I'm going to address a bunch of points you just made.
Okay, that's fine.
You just touched on a bunch of the topics I wanted to get into tonight.
And so anyway, we'll get there in a second. And then so she's telling me about all of this, and I said, well, and as a matter of fact, I told her, you know, to come listen what night we were on, and I said, just come tune in the show. You're going to learn a lot about these kind of contacts. And
mm-hmm.
So she asked me point blank, can you stop it? I said, I said, well, Boo, can you stop an alien abduction? She said, well, no. I said, well, you can't really stop a government abduction. And I said, if you make too much of a stink about it, I said, it's going to backfire on you, and then you're going to have additional complications in your life other than the alien contact or the MILAB contact. I said, because the government's got a way, or the military or whoever this happens to be that controls all of this,
mm-hmm.
has a unique way of shutting people up when they don't cooperate. And, you know, because she really wanted to go, but she was telling me, she even asked about coming on a radio show and talking about it. And I said, well, if you really want to, I said, but remember, I said, there may be, I try to be honest with all contactees and all MILABs, because sometimes there's consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know who it's going to be or why it's going to be, but sometimes there is. And but anyway, getting back to what I was saying about it, go ahead.
Well, let me address that, what you just said real quick, because I can say some stuff from my research. When you say, it's kind of a two-part question. One is, can you make it stop?
Mm-hmm.
And the other is, does it stop? First off, the military involvement stuff, which, again, I'll clarify for those who are new listening, is really everything from low-grade harassment and surveillance that abductees experience, like telephone stuff that happens. And I'm not just clicks and stuff. Yeah, that may be it. There could be other reasons for that. But when it becomes more specific, when the obviousness of someone picking up another line when you're on the phone while you're specifically talking about this subject, or losing connection in the middle of talking about a very specific part of your alien abduction, that kind of thing, you know, it becomes where it becomes like, okay, this seems to be deliberate, and it seems to have happened more than once to you. You know, you can kind of see a pattern. But the phone stuff, mail tampering, sending information to a researcher, them claiming that they only got 3 of the 5 things you sent them, or none of them, or whatever, or someone sending you information, you getting it in the mail, they sent you 3 or 5 things, and you only got 2 of them, you know, or whatever. So the mail tampering, which can be kind of obvious. It can be obvious that it was opened and resealed. It can be obvious that stuff's missing or you never got it. Being watched and being followed, you know, having people watch your home, take photos, park outside in a van, monitor you, watch where you work, this kind of thing. And sometimes it can be really quite, you know, deliberate. Being followed certainly by dark cars, this kind of thing. Being approached, some people are approached where they work, or approached in other ways and weren't, you know, warned off the subject. And then can go as far as having what I call the reabduction, the being picked up and interrogated about your experiences, being being questioned, being put through certain kinds of tests, then doing medical stuff on you, and certainly threatening you, and a line of questioning which we can get into later more specifically. And then also involvement in your life. You're befriended by some insider that you is curious how you met this person. They may be directing you on how you should go public or not go public. You could become involved romantically with someone. You could become involved in a business deal that only you find out that this person's an insider and the deal goes astray, or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of influence, involvement, and manipulation of someone's life. But that's at the extreme, you know, level. The basics are the harassment, surveillance, which can start out pretty low grade, and of course the black helicopter harassment. And a lot of abductees have phone stuff, mail stuff happen, phone stuff happen, mail stuff happen, black helicopter harassment stuff happen. I now have come to the point in working with enough people with this that when people come to me and say, well, this is happening, I know the next questions to ask, and I can kind of see what's going to happen next. And they get to a certain level of the involvement, and I say, you know, let me know if you see aliens and military together. That's another thing. That I used to be more hesitant to address as such a big part of this scenario. But the presence of alien and military together, that you have an alien abduction predominantly, but that there's military present or guys in suits present, or that you have a human experience where you remember being taken by humans, maybe taken to an underground base, but there's aliens present. These two things are extremely common in the abduction field. But getting back to what I was going to say about making it stop, is if you have low-grade stuff happening and they're warning you in some way, now I don't necessarily want to tell anyone pull back, because I want to hear about what has happened to you. I want you to contact me. I want you to speak up for the UFO community. They have to realize that to the degree this is happening. So part of me wants to encourage everyone to go public. But at that point when that harassment and surveillance stuff starts happening, if you pull back and lay low, there's a tendency from my research, from cases, where they tend to leave people alone. Especially if they're warning you. If they're warning you and you back off, they tend to leave you alone. Not always. Sometimes it increases, but I'm just saying there's a percentage. And then if it increases to, like, the next level, then you can do nothing, and they may or may not be involved with you again. Or at that point, you can go public. And when someone says, how do I really make this stop? If it's gotten very aggressive in your life, stand on the highest mountaintop and scream at the top of your lungs. I mean, go on the radio shows, write the articles, be public, because the people who have been extremely public in this subject, myself and a few others I know, tend to be left alone. I mean, initially, they try to stop you from being public, but at a certain point, it seems like all you're doing is you're drawing attention to it. You become more hassle than you're worth.
Yeah.
And so that's it. It's like part of it is realizing that this involvement is happening because they're interested and they're wanting some information to the degree you're useful to them. So another thing is, if you learn to become very conscious in your experiences, most abductees know, most abduction researchers know, if you become very conscious in your abduction research, you can change and alter your abduction research.
True.
I mean, your experience, I'm sorry. In your alien abduction experience, you become very conscious, you become very present. You either don't agree or you refuse to move, you know, whatever. You become a pain in the ass, and it changes it. Or they treat you with a tremendous amount more respect, and you start getting clearer information, and your experiences change. So some people have stopped their experience. That's the whole research of I'm pulling a blank on her name right now. Female abduction research, older lady. Oh, I'll think of her name.
Mary Rodwell?
No. I'll think of her name in a second. But anyways, but she's worked with people who have, and say no, and do it repeatedly in a way that it has stopped and altered the experience. A lot of other people just know that, and other researchers have talked about becoming so conscious in the experience that the experience changes and becomes a much more pleasant one where you're more of a participant and a contactee, willingness kind of sense, where and you're treated more respectfully. But anyway, so that's like a whole other show to talk about those things. But my point being that you can change and do, you know, and alter your abduction experience. Well, in your military experience, that stuff doesn't so much happen, but you're becoming conscious in the experience. For instance, if they're questioning you and you're not providing them with the information they want, they'll start leaving you alone because you're not useful to them. So you make yourself not useful. So you can, first of all, you can, as I started to say, you can heed the warnings and the threats and lay low. They may leave you alone. It has worked for some people. If that doesn't work, then become aware enough of your experiences that you are no longer useful to them, or become such a loudmouth like me that you're a pain in the ass and they leave you alone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It works for me. I'm very public. I know another other abductees who are and get left alone. If they think they can threaten you, and their threatening is successful, then they'll continue to threaten you because you're doing what they want.
Yeah, well, I know it has a lot to do with what you're working on, what you're saying, who's involved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like with contactees. You know, I've had a few of them say, well, I can stop my abduction. Bad part with that is, under deep regression, it never stopped.
It was
just wiped out so they don't remember, which is fine.
Too.
It still worked for them, you know, as far as they're concerned, it stopped. So that's all that really mattered there.
Well, yeah, and that too. And I can't tell anyone, in whether alien or the military involvement experiences, that your abductions will stop, because
yeah.
I have not found anything consistent. I'm just saying, I'm giving patterns that have seemed to work for some people. I do know some people that have laid low and have been left alone out of laying low. So I have to say that has worked for some people.
Yeah. Well, all they did with me was, when I first started hosting Wake Up Years, because I was pretty hot and heavy on a lot of the government stuff and alien agendas and things. Now, I still see them every once in a while if I'm doing some contactee research or maybe going out to a case. But this one occasion when they came out when I was at work with all the guys, which was nice because there was like 30 guys there that day, so it was kind of like about 15. But it was nice. There was lots of witnesses. But all they told me was, you know, look, Joe, we don't mind you talking about this on air. Actually, we're kind of glad you're doing it. Just don't talk about the alien agenda. Actually, the way he worded it was not so much don't talk about the alien agenda, just don't talk about this part of the alien agenda, which we had gotten in the night before, had gotten into some pretty heavy detail.
Yeah.
And other than that, they didn't care what I was doing.
Yeah.
And but I still notice they do tag us. You know, when we have abduction meetings or even at the local meetup group we sponsor down here, you'll see them. There'll be a white SUV parked across the street, tinted windows. They're just listening. I mean, they're not harassing.
Yeah.
It's a subtle form of harassment, I guess. But you know
that
I've actually gotten used to. That doesn't even bother me. Or like when they like to. When we head off the Gulf Breeze or out to Mississippi or Alabama to go investigate a case, they have a tendency to want to follow you. And I'll leave them suckers on a four-hour rendezvous through the woods before I actually go. Just to irritate them. But, you know, I tell contactees the same thing. Look, something's going to work. Different things, you just got to work something out. And if you can deal with it like us, then you just deal with it and it becomes part of what you do. And if you can't.
Yeah.
And it does. Different things are going to make stop
for
different people.
And certainly, you know, support groups, talking to researchers, sharing your experiences, your information, just the talking about it with like-minded or understanding people makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it does. It
makes so much difference. Another thing I wanted to address that you brought up in the story there of your friend was. And you were saying something about your own research about, oh, you know, 1 in 100, 1 in 10, so maybe not having that many. Well, first off, 1 in 10 and 1 in 100 is a big difference.
Yeah, I know.
but that aside, another new thing in my research that I'm realizing, and I'm really having to step up to the plate and go, wait a second, is it's happening to a lot more abductees than I... It's not necessarily that it's happening to more people, but I realize it's been happening more all along than even I had previously realized. I think when you say 1 in 10, that's probably a much more accurate description.
When I
say it's happening, it can start, as I said, with the low-grade harassment and surveillance stuff, the being watched or followed or the phone stuff, And I'm not saying for abductees to be, you know, paranoid. I mean, this will be blatant, and it'll happen repetitively where you'll need to realize to the degree it's happening. And the phone stuff and the mail tampering or black helicopters. And black helicopters, I was going to say, are nice, but that's going to come out wrong. But, I mean, not that that's a good thing to have happening, but when it happens, you're able to really draw, you know, that line in the sand and go, wait a second. You know, and I'm not just saying helicopters fly over, because I have people calling me all the time, oh, I had a helicopter fly over. No. This is like, if it's black and unmarked, it first off doesn't have to be black, but the predominant of the experiences. And if it's hovering illegally low, circling repetitively, and if you have more than one of these, I mean, the people I know who've had black helicopter stuff tend to have a lot of it.
Yeah.
And so. You know, where I live here, helicopters fly over this area all the time. Since my 6 years of living in this location, I am not aware of a helicopter harassment while living here. Part of it is I'm so close to a major airport that I'm thinking, well, you know, it's inconvenient for them.
Yeah, I gave you something, a government witness game. He said the only reason they use black helicopters anymore, he didn't say in the beginning why, but he said anymore is, well, he said helicopters. He said some places, especially in this country, have natural interference, so they can't use satellite or they can't use other means of surveillance, so they don't have a choice. He said, nowadays, though, he said, to be honest with you, Joe, he said, most of the satellites we have now, he said, I can see you sitting in your room in a various of different ways and hear everything you're saying.
Yeah.
And he said, if you're using a phone line, see, like right now, and I've said this 100 million times on the air, there's a third-party gadget on my phone. It tells me if there's an open line, meaning that besides me and you, that means someone else is on the line.
Uh-huh.
It's on right now. It's been on every show since Wake Up USA.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always tell them, hi, hey, guys, I hope y'all are enjoying the show.
Yeah.
And got a pencil and paper because you might learn something.
Yeah,
because,
yeah, there you go.
You know, well, and then another ufologist friend of mine, actually Stan Friedman, brought this up. He said, well, Joe, it's one-stop shopping. He said, think about it, because we have several ufologists on the network, several researchers on the network, and they're all bringing everybody who's anybody to the network, so it's one-stop shopping.
Yeah, it is.
Between us and Coast to Coast, they don't really have to go follow anybody.
Yeah, they can tune into you guys and get all their information, yeah.
They don't have to follow, but I tell people, too, if they're going to start going to support groups or they're going to start going public with this, expect a little harassment. I mean, a little. It's not a lot, but don't think you're crazy when you see this
SUV
following
you. And early on in the research, I thought, okay, well, you know, you get into why is this happening to abductees and how do they know you're an abductee kind of thing. And early on, it seemed obvious to me, because most of the cases I also was aware of and had written books and, you know, been on radio and blah, 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 were all cases that were, like, well-known and people who'd gone public. So at first I was like, well, it's only, you know, people who are going public about this that are being threatened and warned and, you know, et cetera. And then over time, I've worked with so many abductees that have never gone public. Some of them don't even tell their spouse this is happening to them. You know?
That's common, too.
And still have this kind of stuff happen. So I realized, okay, it's not just because they're going public. But at the same time, while it starts happening, may or may not have something to do with someone going public, when you do start going public, there's a tendency for it to happen, and there's a tendency, if it already has happened, for it to increase. Especially if there are threats and warnings involved when you start going public, that increases.
Well, you know, that's a good point you brought up because, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we do have cases where people are followed and harassed who have never gone public, ever.
Yeah,
have never
said
anything to anybody or anything else.
Exactly. Oh, some of these haven't even, like I said, haven't even told their spouses. Yeah, you know, their spouses barely even know that they're having the alien stuff, if they even know that.
Yeah.
But they could have this other level of involvement and are totally, you know, afraid to share it with anyone. There's a whole bunch of things I want to get into on the show, and I realize we're not going to have enough time.
We'll get it. We'll squeeze in, and then we'll book you again. So
but on that same line, as I said, so many people are having this happen that I realize this low-grade harassment surveillance stuff is really a high percentage of abductees. I mean, it may be where the reabduction interrogation thing is 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20, but the lower grade harassment surveillance is maybe 3 out of 5.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe the numbers aren't that high.
Well,
it's hard
to put a number on it, but I know what
you know,
mean.
For instance, I was talking earlier about being at a CERO support group, one of Yvonne Smith's Close Encounter Resource Organization support groups. And I was at one a couple of weeks ago. It was the first time I'd been back in a long time. And I quickly just mentioned, when she had me introduce myself and talk about my own experiences, I can tell from what Yvonne said she wanted me to say a little bit about myself. So I said I also researched this subject, and I talked about, you know, the harassment surveillance and kind of just threw off the first couple of sentences like I already said on your show. And in doing so, and I wasn't aware that she had like 14 people there that night, you know, a lot of these people, I don't know much about their story, or I only know a little bit about their alien stuff. And here, everyone in the room was nodding, rolling their eyes. I mean, nodding like that heavy, you know, that
heavy,
I call it headbanger nods, you know.
Oh, I agree. I think it's...
In other words, the reactions, as I was mentioning, just rolling off these things, like phone harassment and mail tampering and Black House Doctor, the nods and the reactions in the room suggested to me that pretty much everyone in that room had some level of this. I mean, I was getting pretty much, you know, granted, maybe not everyone, but out of 14 people, at least 10 of them have heavy reactions to what I was saying. And here Yvonne is not aware to the degree that this exists in her own research, that her own cases have had this happen.
Yeah, she's a little scary about male attitude.
Yeah, most of the abduction researchers are. And, you know, I'm friends with these people. I love them dearly. I support their contribution in abduction research is amazing. And, you know, Yvonne, Barbara, Bud, you know, just, you know, everybody. I just start listing them all. And the thing is, yet this subject, even though they have cases of it, they're so cautious about it. And to me, it's like, first off, it makes so much sense that it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't make sense if it wasn't happening, you know. It just means their research is that valuable, that real. It's happening to that many people, and it's happening to so many people. And because it's about other beings interacting with us, other beings that the cover-up boys, as Jim Sparks would call them, the black budget boys, the BBB, mm-hmm. the black budget boys, that they do crash retrievals and back engineer craft and recover alien bodies. And if you know, if you're much into this UFO subject at all, you realize this has happened, you know, and not more than once, you know, pretty extensively. And those guys who are involved with the subject to that level, of course, would be interested in, wait a second, who are these people? What's happening to them? Why is it happening to them? Since they're having direct contact with these same aliens, what do they know, as you said earlier, about the alien agenda? What do they know about alien motives? Why are they being abducted? What does this have to do with the human race? And can we combat it? Is there military stuff we can come up with to fight against it? You know, I mean, that abductions are a matter of national security. If abductions are real, they should be a matter of national security, right?
Oh, they should be, yeah.
Yeah, but... and guess what? Guess what my research shows? They are. And so, therefore, abduction researchers shouldn't be scared of my research. They should say, this is the logical next step. This means since there's this cover-up, since there's this policy of non-disclosure going on, then, of course, these guys involved on this in such a deep level, you know, of back engineering the technology and developing it, then of course they would be interested, and of course some of the abductees would become subjects of interest to them, to the point where they may then want to, you know, contact that abductee, talk to them. Well, if they did that in any public sense, or if they came to your front door and knocked to talk to you, guess what that's called? That's called disclosure. They're not going to do that because they're profiting from this subject. They're developing technology. It gets into the whole basis for why there's a cover-up to begin with, or as I like better to call it, a policy of non-disclosure.
Right. You know that
the whole basis of that would mean that there's no way that they can approach you in any normal sense, because even if they come to you and you say, yes, I promise, you know, as an abductee, if you come to me and you talk to me, I'm willing to talk to you. A lot of abductees are saying, God, if they only came to me, I'd be willing to. Yeah, you'd be willing to, and then you'd be screaming from the highest mountaintop. I mean, you wouldn't keep that quiet. And they know that. You're too much of a risk.
Yeah.
You know, you're already pissed off about your experiences. You're going to be that much more pissed off that the government knows about something and isn't telling other people. You're way too much of a security risk. But that doesn't mean they're going to leave you alone. That means they're going to say, okay, how can we get this information through other means? Well, we can get it through other means by surveillance, monitoring, and re-abducting and interrogation. That's how we can get this information. And since the abductee is already put in the state of mind of the denial over their alien experiences, we can just use that to our advantage. And we can either, A, make them think it's an alien experience, or B, use the same techniques to have them forget it.
Well, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, we launched this thing. We started looking to see, first off, what aliens might be working with the government. Because you always hear about the Greys, sometimes you hear about the tall red doctor and stuff. So, you know, we started programming contactees to ask the Greys. Well, when you ask the Greys, they say it's not them, even though countless abductees have told me about seeing Greys at military bases.
Uh-huh.
So we started forcing the issue, and we reworded the question. Well, most of the answers we got is that it's the Greys, but it's not the Greys. It's like a splinter fraction of the Greys. And the reason this was bothering me so much, Melinda, is I couldn't understand, like, Roswell.
Yeah.
I know the Greys have the ability to take your whole damn car, you and everything else.
Yeah.
Okay? I know that. I've experienced it myself, so it's not even, I don't even have to be convinced. So I know if they wanted that ship at Roswell or those bodies, they would have retrieved them. So I got to thinking, it could only be two possible explanations. Either they wanted us to have them, playing in front,
uh-huh.
or if it was a splinter group, they wouldn't have touched them. They would have just let it stay there.
Those are two likely answers. I don't know what the answer is.
I don't either.
Somebody let the military have those.
Yeah, and they do lie. So that's another thing in dealing with any of these races. You have to understand, they do lie. They don't always tell the truth.
And the other thing is, too, if you kind of go back, and I don't know, you know, if this is totally legit or not, but we'll just throw out the theory of there being agreements, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's definitely
there's agreements with some types and not others, and, you know, it stands to reason there's many different types, and agreement with one doesn't mean an agreement with all.
Well,
these agreements that happened, it could be the start of that, the diplomacy on the alien side was, okay, they brought us down with their technology, maybe that's legit, or maybe a storm did or a combination thereof, but whatever. They let them keep it because it was the start of that diplomacy of, these guys, you know, need evidence of us for us to then start our interaction with them.
Yeah,
so letting them have it and to start that diplomacy, you know, may have been the only way to break the ice.
Well, the supposable deal was cut, 6 years later, not even that much longer later, 1951, 1952, I think is when they said that the president cut a deal allowing for the exchange of technology for free abductions without harassment.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, now, ladies and gentlemen, you hear me saying this, there is no way we can prove this. Now, Grant Cameron's got some good information, and there's a few others out there that's even got a paper trail for this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
in all honesty, guys, there's no way to prove it, okay? It's just a theory, so please don't take it as fact, because people start writing to me about this.
Sure.
But that's the whole problem. So, and that's one of the things we've been tracking, you know, what aliens are present. Now, I've never heard, by the way, about a reptilian being present at a military installation, but I have heard that...
Well, I can tell you straight from one of my... And by the way, sorry to backtrack to the very beginning of the show.
That's okay, go on back.
But the very beginning of the show, you asked me, what started you? And I said, that's a loaded question. And then I got off on a tangent and never answered it.
Mm-hmm.
What started me investigating this was my own experiences with it.
Yeah.
So I'm, as an abductee, then I had the military involvement stuff and had some pretty, you know, amazing experiences with it and started to self-investigate, wow, could this have really happened to me? Has it happened to other people? As I slowly opened up about it, I'd already been public for about 2 years at that point with my, you know, abduction experiences. Like I said, 18 years, so it's like 3 years prior. And then all of a sudden, about 3 years into it, when I realized I was having this military stuff happen, I started to kind of include that slowly in lectures and discussions and, you know, and with researchers and stuff, and started to learn that I wasn't alone and started to read other people's books that included it, like we were saying, Katarina Wilson and Leah Haley and Kip Carlsberg and, you know, various people that have all written about it, and certainly Carla Turner.
Yeah.
And as I read these and I went, oh, okay, I'm not alone, you know, and then slowly...
Hello.
Oh, okay. That was interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That's someone on the line.
Yeah, That was really weird, since all the lines should be with me. Oh, anyway. Great. Well, oh, wait. I'm going to let you finish, but I just got to, I know we're getting close to the top of the hour break,
yeah.
And I just got a question from a lady. Her name is Ginger. She's lives in Georgetown, Washington, D.C. She's a paralegal for one of the larger legal firms down
uh-huh.
there. And anyway, they were, she had wrote in and said she thinks she may have had a male lab experience, and you know, I emailed
uh-huh.
her back and told her, right, either one of us, but she wanted to know if she should resist or fight it or just go with the flow. What do you think?
Depends. initially, for her safety, go with the flow.
Yeah, that's what I would say, too.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to talk to her, find out more about where she at with it, what exactly has happened. If you resisted in the experience, they can be kind of rough. I've got stories of that, including a guy who was punched in the stomach because he was resisting and developed a hernia later, and luckily that's one of my evidence cases. He has lots of evidence, but one of the things he has is a medical report showing he developed a hernia from blunt force trauma, and it was because he resisted. He told off one of the guards in the experience. That guard waited for him to be alone, came back into the room, and punched him in the groin really hard.
Yeah, that's what I say, because I tell everybody, you know, if you think you need to resist, go ahead. But I'd be honest.
Yeah.
I've had dealings with these people we're talking about this evening, and I've never resisted except on one occasion, and that is public. It's on the Alien Enigma site, and it was a nasty little fiasco, which I'm not going to get into
mm-hmm.
tonight. But the thing about it is most cases, they're going to bring you in, they're going to do some testing, they'll take a lot of different, it depends what if it's your first, second, third, or 15th time, what they're going
yeah.
to be doing. But the first couple of times, it's more about they'll take samples, they'll do a little programming, they'll access some memories. But
yeah.
And then it may get more intense if you're a contactee. Now, let me explain this right quick, because I know we're getting short on time.
Yeah.
There's levels of contacts, ladies and gentlemen, and some contactees know more than other ones, or they retain more.
Absolutely.
Some contactees, like we like to refer to as keepers, have a working relationship with the aliens, which makes them much more valuable to the government. So, of course, when they're picked up, the line of questioning and the things they do are going to be quite a bit more intense, because the government has more of a chance of getting information or useful information from these people. So it really has to do with your level of contact, where you are, what you're doing, what you understand, what you don't understand, and that's really going to dictate from that point forward what happens to you. But I can tell you it's the same and different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way I can really explain it. But as far as everyday stuff like I'm following, I wouldn't even worry about that.
Yeah.
You know, I ignore that stuff.
You know, I would say if you're having that low-grade harassment surveillance, if they're following you, even if they approach you, if anything's said to you, journal it. You know, it's important in even your alien abduction experience stuff, because you do forget stuff with time. You don't realize that something in your life is becoming a pattern, and you're able to maybe know ahead of time when an abduction's going to happen, that kind of thing. It's really important for abductees to journal. It's also very hard to do, but it's a very good introspective thing to do. Same with this, you know, write it down, try to document it. If you have mail tampering, save the evidence.
Yeah.
I need your evidence, save
yeah.
it, please. You know, if you have phone stuff, if they leave a message on your answering machine, make a copy for me, please. I mean, I'd get some of this, but so many, you know, abductees are all self-programmed, whether
yeah.
it's by the aliens, by themselves, or by the government, all the above, but regardless, they're all programmed to destroy their evidence.
I'll have to ask Linda. She still has that envelope about, oh, God, I should even know how long
but,
this
but,
ago.
But my point being, like you said, if it's the low-grade harassment surveillance, yeah, document it. Chalk it up to evidence. Chalk it up to, hey, wow, my experiences are real.
Do like
okay?
I do. Get your video camera out. And, use
and get your video camera.
Hey,
the
they leave
the
when you do that.
The guy's your house. Get your camera out and film him.
I do.
And get his license plate for me, please.
You know, I have gotten probably over the years 7 or 8 government plates. My stepfather's a retired state trooper, so I'll get him to run the plates. He's got, like, way up there security and state troopers. And they always come back as don't exist. They
yeah.
always come back as they don't exist, which is...
But that's interesting in itself, if
yeah.
that's a consistent thing.
Especially if
you've
got a picture of it.
Especially, you know, you're getting a definite plate, and if no one can trace that plate, that's evidence in itself that it's an untraceable plate. You know?
Yeah, he asked me about that one time. He said, where are you getting these plates from? I said, these are government vehicles. I said, you see the plates of the U.S. government on it. And, I mean, these are obvious, by the way, but it's just government vehicles, government plates. You know, it was funny because I've seen him dressed in a variety of different ways, but usually, in my case, now I can't say this for everybody, but in my case, a lot of times they're in gray suits, black sunglasses, white SUVs with tinted windows, and usually carrying a 45 millimeter underneath their coat. They're very soft-spoken. They're not screaming, hollering, or cursing, or yelling at me or anything. Even though on occasions they have pulled their jacket back so I could see the gun, so I just moved my jacket back so they could see mine. So it's all fair then, you know. Yeah. See, I don't get scared.
That's
easy.
Another thing I want to tell abductees, with the don't resist, don't go into the experience armed.
Oh, yeah, if you can avoid it, don't. By the way, let me clarify that. I carry a gun not because of the alien abductions or the government. I carry a gun because of some of the places I go, Billy Bob might think I'm going to be his date. So.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not the animals, it's just it's other humans. That's why I carry a pistol. I wanted to clarify that.
I would hope that most of the audience would assume.
Well, you know,
that
people,
you carry it for the most usual and sane reasons.
Actually, I give it to Linda. I told her, here, if you see anything that looks wrong, shoot them. So y'all better watch out if y'all ever come walking up in my car. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a break. I want everyone to please stay tuned to UFO Undercover. I am your host, Joe Mantello.
You had a question for me a little while ago. As soon as we come back, I'm going to answer it.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Well, as soon as we come back in, you can answer. Remember, too, ladies and gentlemen, you can listen to us now on 105.3 FM New Orleans, since our numbers have changed. You can also listen to us on UpSnap by typing in P-A-R-A into your cell phone, and the number is 27627. You can listen to me. If you got to go to the store right now, you don't have to not hear the show, guys. Flip it on, check it out, listen. It's easy, it works good, it's nice. Of course, there's a myriad of ways you can listen to us on the Internet. You can go to the Paranormal Radio Network site. There's at least five or six ways you can get there. We're listed on archives now on 41 archive sites, including iTunes. So if you can't find our archives, shame on you is all I can say. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll see y'all in about 8 minutes, so please stay tuned. And we are...
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Oh, sorry about that. The people in the virtual auditorium, y'all couldn't hear us there, could you? Sorry, guys. Everybody else could, just y'all couldn't.
Yeah,
I had forgot to turn the auditorium back on. But, hey, y'all can hear us now. But, you know, it's the whole thing is kind of strange. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I was talking with Melinda about Betty and Barney Hill at the break. We're not going to bring it up tonight, but in the future we are.
Okay.
But anyway, I know you wanted to answer some questions and make some points, so go ahead.
Well, you had said something about seeing all sorts of different alien types with the military.
Mm-hmm.
Except you said not reptilians.
Now, I haven't heard about them, but I don't know.
Well, let me set the record straight.
Oh, God, here we go. I'm going to have to add something else to
now,
my damn database.
I don't want to take this conversation too far around the bend, because as soon as you get into the reptilian thing, it tends to take it around the bend. But in my own experience, one of my military experiences, actually myself and a fellow researcher that her and I were originally going to do a book together, and we kind of started to go public with this research together, her and I had an experience where we were both taken from her apartment, and out of all my experiences, it probably is the one with the most amount of evidence, because there was quite a bit of evidence left. But in this case, we were both taken to an underground base, and both of us, we were separated, we were both interrogated separate from each other, and we were a reptilian was brought in to induce fear, basically, separate from each other. So when I had the interrogator, she had the reptilian, and then I had the reptilian and she had the interrogator. It was the same reptilian, same interrogator, but they switched places. She was in one room, I was in another, And in our conscious memory and in regression later, we figured out the timing of this to realize when I was being interrogated, she was being presented the reptilian, and then vice versa. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Okay. I just paused for a second.
Oh, sure.
And so,
you know, so in my experience, that was there. And then I have a couple other cases that have seen it. It's not that predominant. Usually when there's an experience of military and aliens together, it's usually grays and military. Very rarely are other things seen. You can tell me if it's different in your research, but in my research, those other things are rare, and thus the reptilian thing is rare, but certainly I have a few other cases of it too.
Well, yeah, see, that's kind of weird, because now this is what I get 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not that much, about 70% of the time, is just military, nobody else. And then I get these cases where there's usually one or two of the shorter grays present.
Yeah.
And then this red-headed doctor. Now,
yeah.
I have had famous contactees, a non-famous they all describe this overly tall, kind of gangly, red-headed guy. Now, sometimes he has curly hair, sometimes he has straight hair, sometimes it's parted, sometimes I have no idea why it's different. Don't even know if it's the same guy, but they describe him as a tall, red-headed, and green scrubs.
Hmm.
But all the ladies tell me the same thing. He looks human, but he doesn't feel human, whatever that means, okay?
Mm.
I'm not even going to try to distinguish these feelings here, but they always tell me that. Now, I've had some ladies tell me that it kind of felt like a reptilian presence. Some say it's kind of a human presence. Some think they're gray hybrids. Personally, I don't know what they are. All I know for sure is probably one in 50.
Now, there's a little bit of a difference, and I think you and I have talked about this individually before, about maybe there's a East Coast, West Coast kind of difference.
Yeah, and that's
true. For
those
of you who don't know, I'm on the West Coast.
and you're
on the East Coast. But in for the most part, oversimplification, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yes, the redhead guy has come up in a few cases, including my own experience. And in my experience, and in a few other cases that I have, it seems that he's an interrogator.
Yeah,
so he's not there in a medical context, although I'll watch for it more closely. But certainly I can say in my own experience, he was definitely there as an interrogator.
Well, you know, I kind of feel the same way on that. Even though he's in green scrubs, he seems to be there to inflict fear, to ask questions.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be standing there. There's a particular run at the base down in Eglin with that. It's a circle device that sits on the floor. I think there's either 8 or 10 chairs that are connected to it. They all got stirrups and all on them. And, you know, the women tell me they'll be strapped in these chairs and they can see each other. They're all conscious of each other being there. And he'll just walk around, but he's not doing any of the experiments or anything. The grays are, you know, sometimes he might grab by the leg, grab by the arm, but when he does, he's asking a question.
Yeah.
And sometimes they remember the question, sometimes they don't remember the question. But this is definitely a MyLab, Amila, a rehab experience. It's definitely what it is.
Yeah.
But I notice most of the time when they talk about the red doctor or the red-headed doctor or whatever he is, there seems to be a gray present. Now, I'd have to go look and see if there's any cases I have without the grays and only him. But the ones I'm thinking of offhand had grays.
In my experience, when I had him as an interrogator, there was not a gray present.
See, that's what I'm saying. So that's why I said I'd have to go back.
But I have to say, let me think about this. There was not a great present in that experience, no.
And see, that's what I'm saying. So when you start getting into these more and more and you get into them deeper, you know, it's trying to figure out why some cases are like this, some cases are like that.
Well, and the research, I mean, you know, gosh, what, you and I and who else is doing this, you know?
Not many.
Me and you.
Yeah,
that's about it. But, you know, and we're not even comparing our notes. We've talked about this before, but, you know, time and economy, you know, especially time. But yes, you and I even need to compare our notes and stuff on this. And you know, are my patterns different than yours?
It's your fault.
Yes, I'm talking to cases, but, you know, like an alien abduction stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the research and the reaction to the abductees is all the triage phase of you're not alone, yes, this is happening. You know, grays are doing, you know, the farthest along you get in there is maybe the holding your hybrid child, you know, and maybe being shown your hybrid adult if you've been having this go on for a long enough time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know what I'm saying, the basics of the abduction thing. Yes, there's other stuff that comes up, but the majority of abductees going and getting the help and starting off with their first couple of regressions are in the first couple of phases, because you have to work with it longer to get the more information, the deeper stuff, the technical stuff, the earth changes stuff, the, you know, whatever else.
Now
I'm throwing out all sorts of, you know, I realize this is oversimplification, and your audience is probably
they should understand most of this.
Yeah,
I'm hopeful.
But my point being, same with the research you and I are doing, it's still in the triage phase. In fact,
mm-hmm.
we're even back, you know, for the length of time and the amount of work going on in this field, which is Carla Turner, a few people have written about it, Helmut Lammer, you and I, you know, for the most part.
That's about it.
Yeah, that you go, wait a second, if you go back to abduction research, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, you know, that's come a long way. This subject's going to come a long way. So we need to start looking at the patterns, compiling them, not hanging our hat on any of them yet, because it's too early in the research. I'm still in the phase of helping people realize, has this even happened to them? What do they do about it? Like the lady asking you, should I fight back or not? You know, this kind of stuff. And people just coming to terms with the realization that besides their alien experiences, they may have some other experiences too, you know. And we're still there, you know. So, you know, ask us again in 10 years, we'll have better answers.
Yeah, well, we're working on it. Somebody wanted to know about, what's this say? Can she describe the reptilian feet? Oh, somebody wanted to know if you've seen the reptilian feet. Okay, that's a weird question, by the way.
You know what? I don't remember his feet. I actually, I'm not certain. I would think he had boots on, though, in my experience. But to tell you the truth, I'm not clear on that.
No, that was Paul sent that.
His face and his head, on the other hand, I remember pretty well, but not his feet.
Yeah, well, that's another thing, too. You know, when I'm asking for descriptions, I was doing a regression with a lady that was having a hard time. She had a reptilian experience, and see, the reptilian experiences are much different than the other ones are. And it's not that they're bad or good. Reptilians, for lack of a better way of describing them, are more like us than the other two races are, at least in the way we act and the way they view our religion.
Tell me if you agree with this or not. My own experience, and then the experience of other people I know who've had reptilian. And by the way, I've not had reptilian alien. In my alien experiences, by the, you know, general sense of what that means, I have not seen reptilians. The only time I have seen a reptilian is in my military experience, which is usually the opposite. But certainly I'm familiar with a lot of other reptilian alien abduction cases. And tell me if I'm wrong, but it tends to, there are two themes that come up predominantly with the reptilians. The first, of course, is the sexual theme, which is there in reptilian stories. But a lot. And then the other is a mental thing, where the mental connection seems to be really strong, where a mind-reading thing that's more human, like mind with the aliens has more of a control and a limitation, but it seems to be, am I wrong? I just thought that's my perception.
Well, I'll tell you a little secret that took me a decade to find out. There was some stuff coming out about reptilian reports we could not figure out. It was kind of confusing. So we started program contactees to ask questions, which is one of the things we learned about 15 years ago you could do. You could just program them, the questions in, it transmits to them automatically. A lot of times the alien answers without realizing, regarding what race they are. Well, and the reptilians comes to find out, it seems, now, like I said, we can't prove this, but the evidence suggests that the reptilians only abduct inside their family line. Meaning that if you are abducted by a reptilian, you are related to that reptilian. Well, get this. Reptilians have genetic memory. We couldn't figure out why these contactees were having some of these elaborate things. They were seeing these places and experiences, and we're like, there's no way they're going here. Come to find out, they have genetic memory. They're sharing the reptilian's memories. Anytime they get close to them, it triggers it. And it took a while for us to distinguish between what was actually going on in the contact and what was actually being triggered by the thing. And then the way we figured it out was sometimes a big male would pick them up, and it would be a specific type of memory would come out. Sometimes it would be dealing with one of the females or some of even the younger males. Well, it was a whole different experience. And the vivid images they were having were different because the experiences for that alien were different, even though they were all related. But they said they all have genetic memory, and you can see forward and backward from that point back. And I found that interesting, and it did explain, well, because I got a lot of them, they were describing this room. It's underwater. you know, and they all agree, by the way, that the reptilians are amphibians, but there was this big dome underwater and these, this big, dark, brown room behind it, and they had this thing in the center with a ball on it. And all of them say the same thing. You put your hand on the ball, you think of something, and this screen pops up and you can access all this information. Now, I've heard this literally a couple of hundred times.
And I've heard stuff like that too.
But, you know, one of the, they started telling me that they felt like this was not here. This was another world. Well, if it's true and they're from Draco, that's several, like 50, 60 light years out or something. So it's not probable that they're going there and coming back. But they are seeing it. So first we thought maybe the reptilians were projecting it, but then we realized because they felt like they were living it. And a matter of fact, a lot of times they said they didn't even feel like their selves, that they felt like someone else. And once they started telling me that, I realized what was going on. I said, well, if the genetic memory is real, this probably explains a lot. But then with the reptilians, it's like the Greys. Some experiences are enlightening. Some experiences are painful. Some experiences are somewhere in between.
It's all over the place.
And it's like the sex thing you brought. I'll tell you all a secret, ladies. In general, now this isn't law, but in general, between ages about 33 and about 53 is when they like to take women and do stuff. Now, I'll tell you something else we learned. If you're forceful, and you have to be forceful, they won't do it. They'll stop. It's not that they're going to stop the abductions, by
the way.
That's
interesting you should say that, because in it,
it's like
that's actually just within my military experience when with the reptilian. Both my ex-co-author, I call her, for simplification, my ex-co-author, and myself, both of us had a situation. Mine was more of a threat of a sexual, you know, I'll tell you, one's a rape threat of being killed, and but I realized it was a mental projection, wasn't really happening. And when I realized, wait a second, I'm not feeling this. This is a mental projection. This isn't actually happening to me. And I then, like, resisted the mental image. He stopped. And kind of reacted like, I mean, the reason I'm doing that was to induce a great sense of fear in me that it was a vision of myself being killed very brutally, but when he backed off, there was some kind of body language that told me there was respect for the fact that I resisted it.
And they do,
and that was very true, and that's interesting. You and I have never talked about this.
No, we haven't.
And that's very true to my own experience with, in that military thing where it was just totally supposed to be the images, you know, to induce the fear of. And in fact, the interrogator said, if you continue, you know, next time we're going to let him do what he wants. And what he wanted, supposedly, or at least the image, was rape and brutal. I can't even say it. Rape and brutally murder. You know, but again, that was just the image given. And like I said, he backed off. And my ex-co-author, even though her experience was separate from mine, and the images he gave her were about a different thing. She actually had two sons, and the images were of her sons being killed, not her. But she also resisted the image, realizing she wasn't actually witnessing that happening. And she had a similar experience where he backed off, and again there was respect for the pushing it away, you know.
Yeah. Well, it was just weird, but it does work, and I'll give you another particular instance.
Well, let's, if we can, because I knew, see, we're going around the bend.
We only got 30 minutes, so we better get on topic.
No, but that's okay, and, you know, gosh, you know, it's certainly, you know, a subject, and certainly if other people have had the reptilian stuff, I mean, if you haven't, or you're new to the abduction subject overall, you probably just wrote us off as being nuts, unfortunately, it is a part of it, and I'm one of those people that, when it comes to the abduction subject, the things that come up a lot in cases, no matter how uncomfortable they are, whether that's the reptilians, whether that's the adult hybrid children, or, you know, or whatever it is that, you know, I think it all needs to be included for a fair and balanced, I hate that term, but you know what I mean, for a fair and accurate look at the abduction subject, you need to be willing to look at these things, especially when they're repetitive patterns.
Yep, and you do. If you don't, you're missing out on a lot. Well, I don't get some of these researchers. They'll write me. They write a book. I'm not going to mention any names. Oh, well, I've talked to 10 people. I'm like, really? So you know what's going on? Like, well,
yeah,
I'm writing a book. I'm like, and then I'll see him on tour, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, and this is why my life is so damn hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sometimes don't get, well, you know, I've said this on the air, and I've said this at conferences, ufology is its own worst enemy.
Yeah.
But, you know. They're going to give me hell for saying that.
Well, you know.
You know me, and you're considered friends of ufology,
yeah.
Right? We're like the black sheep or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Maybe not
you
the
and
black
I have
sheep,
a lot of friends, too. So,
yeah,
you know.
We do, yeah. We're very lucky.
We have
lucky
enough friends that they're willing to, like, look the other way and go, oh, well, that's just Joe. That's just Melinda.
That's right. They got to tolerate us. That's what I tell them all the time. I said, yeah, you're stuck with us now. You just got to tolerate us.
That's right.
Well, because, you know, we're wrong more than we're right, and it's hard to, you know. You don't want to give up a good source of information, because I've had many conversations about you, because you're more controversial than I am, which is hard to damn believe.
And the thing is, mine at its base, I mean...
I don't think you're controversial,
exactly,
by the way.
Exactly, it shouldn't be. And we started to talk about this very briefly on the break, and this is a good thing to get into now, which is, in the abduction research community... And kind of the subject needs to be handled there first before it branches out into the UFO community. But overall, in the abduction research community, the resistance, I think, to this military involvement thing is they've been so long trying to again, as I said, the triage, you know, get to helping the abductees, the dealing with this and bringing it kind of down to earth in a serious way to get the other psychologists, and psychotherapists and everybody on board with going, okay, you know, if people come to you with this, there's ways to help them. This may be real. It may not be imaginary. You know, and it's so much about trying to prove the alien abduction that when you get into the military stuff, because there have been some kind of noisy loud voices out in there in the community in the past who suggested it's all mind control, and if you have military stuff at all, it's all military kind of thing, that it's swung the pendulum so much in the opposite direction that I think there's this knee-jerk reaction in the abduction field overall to the military involvement stuff, because it's like, heaven forbid you detract from the main message of there being an alien abduction.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm constantly needing to explain, and thank God you get it, and probably your listeners hopefully get it now, but which is that the only reason that these covert ops, black ops, you know, re-abductors, military guys, the only reason they have any interest in you at all is because you've had real alien experiences.
That's the truth.
Now, granted, there are military abduction cases. I mean, there's Abu Ghraib and everything else. That's a totally different thing. There's political reasons for
it.
That
happens. Yeah, it is a whole different thing.
There's also real mind control stuff out there that's completely unrelated to alien stuff. That exists, too. What I'm saying is, if you have had the alien experience, and you're fairly certain and clear about that, you have those memories, you've done the self-discovery process, you know, kind of thing. If they're monitoring or surveillancing you after you've had an alien experience, then that's probably why. If they pick you up and interrogate you about those experiences, it's because you've had the alien experiences that they're spending any money on you, and that's what the bottom line is. Are they spending money on their involvement with you? And the reason they are justifying that is because they want to know what you know. They want to know, you know, they want to know what is it about you genetically that makes the aliens interested in you? Have you been genetically altered or changed? They want to know what you know about alien motives. They want to know what you know about alien agenda, all that, you know, motives and agenda stuff. They want to know what you know about the technology. Have you seen it? Have you operated it? Have you had hands-on? And they want to know about your psi abilities. They want to know, have the aliens enhanced your psi abilities? What are you able to do? Can they duplicate it or use it or use you? Or, you know, so it all comes down to those four things consistently, and you can tell me if your case is vary, but in my cases, it's consistently either about the technology, about the genetics, about the motives, or about the psi. Psi being the psychic ability, you know, but the actual, like, physical manifestation of that. Are you able to do it? Did the aliens have something to do with that?
Well, you know, I was going to ask you at the beginning of the show, and I got sidetracked, but One of the things I've noticed, at least in the last, say, 6 or 7 years, is there has been an intense movement in the Miller cases for the government to be tested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, asking, not so much when I first got involved with this, they were testing this all, but now they seem to be testing these abilities, and not just when they have you there. Sometimes they're even testing these abilities when you're, you know, not actually in abduction mode,
sure.
when you're actually moving around and doing your stuff. And
sure.
I didn't realize to what extent, I got to be honest, until just recently.
Yeah.
And it kind of freaked me out a little bit because I got to thinking about this. I'm like, well, these people aren't really remembering this, but yet somehow they're managing to keep some kind of telepathic link,
yeah.
which is predictable, which also means that somebody there is quite telepathic,
yeah.
or they wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
And again, granted, picking on contactees is the best way to do that because, let's be honest, 90% of all the conversations held between aliens are done, well, probably 99% are
yeah.
done telepathically. So for a contactee, it becomes, you know, especially
yeah.
a long-term contactee, you know, with somebody who's older, is going to have this happen a lot of times, so you'll be very sensitive to it.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right, and a lot of the rehab military involved and experiencers tend to think that they're being somehow mentally monitored sometimes, that they're
yeah.
being remote viewed, and that so there seems to be, you know, some activity. Now, it's hard to define when that's just healthy paranoia to some
yeah.
degree and when that may actually be happening, but I've had some people swear upside down and sideways to me that they've had military guys astral project into their environment, like at home, you know, and monitor them, or remote view them, and you know, that they could have guys that are developed to that capability. Sure, I wouldn't rule it out, you know.
Yeah.
So all I can say is, gee, that's interesting, and I keep waiting for something that suggests there's evidence for that. Someone once told me that they feel this person came, manifested something physical in their environment, and then left that behind. I would suggest that maybe the guy was physically there as opposed to
yeah.
teleporting an object or something. But, you
yeah,
know,
rule it out. Yeah,
you know, again, I it's one of those things. There are a lot of things that come up in abduction research overall and specifically in the military involvement experiences that you have to put on the back burner. You know, Bud Hopkins even used to say 20 years ago hearing him lecture, you know, there's information they put on the back burner until they, you know, they got more cases of it until it moved to the, you know, moved up to the front. And same with this. You know, there's a lot of strange stuff that I'm sure you and I get that you're kind of like, oh, well, you know. And
yeah,
you just kind of got to say, well, I'm going to wait till I hear of other cases of this to see if there's any kind of pattern. And, you know, and then, you know, so much of it you don't know if it's just, it, you know, if the person's of that is specifically true or not.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, you don't know how much is how much, and that's another, and I don't know how you deal with this, but I know all researchers in either one of the abduction fields have to deal with this, is how humans perceive things. I'll have five contactees see the same damn thing, and all five of them describe it different. I'm like, well, what's going on here?
Yeah.
It's perception, and unfortunately, the
yeah.
way you were raised and the way you were taught to believe and the way you run your life that dictates how you react to experiences and then how you explain them to somebody else. And it took me forever to figure out, like, this blue color. For like a decade, I kept hearing blue, this weird and color.
Yeah.
Well, we finally found out what it was, but each contactee was describing it as something different. Some people
yeah.
said it was a mist, a fog, or
yeah.
or they were it was comfortable around them. I'm like, oh, right, look, y'all are going to drive me nuts. But I knew it was real because
yeah.
they all talked about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's the same thing with this. I mean, it's unfortunate because, you know, and it's like, you, especially if the cup half full or half empty, you know, that's all in the way you look at it. To me, it's just half a cup, so I'm already in
yeah.
trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but that's the thing. So, and when it comes down to it, you have to deal with what you consider to be good information, what might be somebody's fertile imagination.
Yes, yes.
You know, and then the occasional person.
And there's a tendency
blind.
That to want to call your experience something. It's one thing to say you see this blue mist-like thing or this blue light that has a texture to it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you want to call it something. So, you know, there's a tendency to want to recognize things
yeah.
and also to use language to describe them when language sometimes falls short, you know.
But we used that as an induction criteria for a long time, the blue plasma.
Well, you know, and interestingly enough, while the blue comes up so much in the alien experiences, I'm kind of letting this out there, because there are things in the past I used to kind of hold back on to see if other people came up with them, and I didn't want to color people's memories. But I'll go ahead and say it right now, which is that in the military experiences, so many times the light, as you call it, is green in color, various shades of green, like kind of a fluorescent green as opposed to that fluorescent blue.
You know, I heard somebody else say that, and when I asked them why they thought it, and here's one, for I never even thought about this before. I asked them why they thought that, and they said, well, Joe, there was a reptilian present. Maybe they're just more comfortable in that color of light. And I was like, what?
No. My theory is the blue is a form of plasma that their technology creates. Okay. Whatever it is that the military guys have in their reverse engineering, you know, or their crash retrieval, whatever it is that they've engineered, whether they've engineered it through human ingenuity or reverse engineered alien or combination thereof, but whatever it is, it's that slight difference about the technology that produces a green plasma as opposed to blue plasma.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I didn't think about
that. That's my theory.
So,
if someone out there is going, wow, I saw green, did you see a military guy present? And if so, give me a call.
And to the person that just popped that IM up, what's the significance about blue and green? Well, it's not the color that's so much significant. First off, it's the fact that you have X amount of people have seen this and described this. I said, that's very significant in itself. And then the color, it actually represents something. It's a physical thing that happens in a contact. Well, the blue is a physical thing, and sometimes it's used as a lot of stuff. But you know, it's very relative. I'm sorry, I'm going to get into it much because then that's skating on abduction criteria, and I'll start getting yelled at by people. But the thing of it is it's a vital part. Actually, anything you can find in any of these cases, whether it's alien abduction in MILAB or whatever kind of contact it may be. Similarities make a difference, guys. It lets us know who's telling the truth and who's not. Because if you get somebody that walks in, and you can't rule this out, even this, but you get somebody that walks in and they have nothing alike in their experience to any other abductee or MILAB, odds are they're not telling you the truth.
Yeah.
Or they're, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. And I was going to ask you that, too. I mean.
And I do get cases that just they don't fit. And when they, you know, I'm using like my fingers in little parentheses, don't fit. You know, when they don't fit, whether it's the alien or the military stuff, you know, you kind of just go, okay, well, you know, and are they misinterpreting? I'll ask better questions.
You know, I got the what the hell.
But
is
you know,
it
a lot of times it's just, you know, they're relaying a dream, which is quite often, or you know, they're a wannabe or so. You know, you're right. Mm-hmm. When it doesn't fit, they're. Little red flags go up.
Yep, and
I mean, and people like you and I who have heard, we haven't heard everything, but we've heard almost everything. You know
heard
what
a
I
lot.
Mean? You know, so you know, it's not like it's our call and we're deciding what is and what isn't. No, we're saying what fits thousands of cases.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
That's what we're doing.
And just because something doesn't fit, we don't totally discount it. But if everything you're sharing doesn't fit. You know, from beginning to end, then okay,
yeah,
we've got
a problem. Yeah, there's a problem there. And,
yeah.
And you know, I get people get mad, but I get the weirdest things because people come call me or write me. Unfortunately, my number's on the internet for a decade now, so people just call me on my cell phone at work and stuff. Look, guys, in case y'all notice, I own a construction company. I do work in the daytime, but they'll call me and start telling me about these things, and I'm like, okay, and why did you? What makes you think you're an alien abductee or a MILAB?
Yeah.
And they'll start telling me why, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then you start doing an investigation, and you find that now these people, by the way, the ones I'm talking about right now, actually thought they were contactees. Turns out there was much different things happened to them in young ages in life. I'm not even going to get into what a lot of it was, but they weren't contactees, and why they picked this to hide that was beyond me. But it does happen. But and then there is just the people who either want fame or they just want to see if they can fool you or what have you. And you know, guys, I want y'all to know it's a waste of our time. I mean, we're trying to accumulate. Look, I got X amount of years on this planet, okay?
Yeah.
And I would rather spend them getting the good data, okay, and not so much determining who's lying and telling the truth.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's where it is. And
but, you know, and just so people know out there, you know, there's certain emotional qualities to having these experiences that when you start really working with a lot of people, the emotional patterns and the what I call the correct emotional responses, you know, come up so consistently that when someone isn't coming at it from that emotional place, it instantly kind of would make someone like you or I go, wait a second here.
You know, and I was going to say that a lot of what both of us do is instinct. Well, a lot of any of the good researchers is instinct. And you're right. I have never met a Mill-Lab contactee, any of them. I mean, this brings up some intense emotions. And even if you're someone like us that are used to talking about it, I don't know if any of y'all have ever heard me before, but there has been times I have actually gotten choked up on the air about
it.
Because if you're good research and you know my case, then you'd know what points to hit with me. But, you know, and every now and then one of the audience or one of the guests do it. But the thing of it is it's intense. So, I mean, if you're just an everyday person who is dealing with this, it's going to wreak havoc on you.
And you
find somebody. Look, there are people, and if you're in the United States, I can tell you now, any place you are in the United States, within 50 or 80 miles, you can find a group these days, okay? ICAR's got several of them out there. There's meetup groups out there. There's groups on the East Coast, West Coast. Several big ufologists are doing groups.
Sure.
Most of them are quite credible. There are a couple, one or two on the West Coast I wish I would avoid, but I'm going to be polite and not say their name. And there's one on the East Coast I definitely wish I would avoid, but I'm not going to say his name either, because I'm going to pick on him in another couple of weeks. And but, you know, there are places now. And even if not, you can look, if you can't find a place, write me. Come on the show, put your hand up, I'll tell you where to go, okay?
Yeah.
And if I can't, I'll at least find someone you can talk to about it with. And, you know, somebody who will actually sit and listen, not prejudge you, and actually have to hear what you're going to say. But please, don't waste our time, guys. None of us, okay? All of us work hard at this, and we all catch a lot of flack, especially people like Melinda and ourselves, because we are more known for putting our head on the chopping block more. You know, we've been real lucky,
but,
actually.
You know, but if you're someone out there who's, you know, for instance, you know, anyone out there who's like, am I going crazy? You know, did this happen to me? I really need to know.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, also if you have children or you think your children may be involved. You know, or how do I talk to my spouse about this? Or, you know, any of those kind of questions, please get in touch with someone, whether it's Joe or I, or Bud, or Yvonne, or Barbara, or, you know, whatever, you know, Dave Jacobs, or, you know, whoever it is, get in touch with someone who knows what they're doing on this subject and get some help, because, you know, you're not alone. I can't say on the air whether you're crazy or not, but you're probably not crazy.
Probably not.
And, you know, and if you're an abductee that is, have the alien stuff, and anything I said or Joe has said about the military involvement stuff fits, or you've had the harassment surveillance, again, you're not alone. There are people in this field, Joe and I, and a few others, that are open to hearing, you know, what's happened to you, and, you know, and please contact us, because, you know, so many times, like, there's the first level of denial is denial over the alien stuff happening to you, and the self-denial over that, even though you might have the physical evidence and the bruises and a new scoop mark overnight and whatever it is, you know. And there could still be that level of denial. But for anyone that's had the military stuff, you go through that denial all over again. And that's one thing, new thing I've realized, Joe, in my research, is the level of denial where an abductee will sit there and tell me about the harassment surveillance. They'll sit there and tell me about the military they saw in the alien underground base or, you know. And yet, they won't see it for what it is, you know. And when I say it point blank to them, it's like the abductees are as uncomfortable with the admitting that as the researchers are, you know.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah, and it's like, and so realizing that, you know, you have to say, look, it's okay. Other people have seen this, too, and it just means your experiences are real.
Yeah, and I told that, I brought that up at Roswell a year before last. I said, thing about it is, if you do have MILAB, all it is confirmation that you're really a contactee or an abductee.
Amen.
I said, it's not that they don't abduct other people like we were talking earlier. There are isolated cases, but in general, what's going on with the MILABs is a controlled study. And you know something I noticed, too? This weirded me out, and I realized that the Greys, especially, I can't say this for all aliens, but I noticed with the Greys have control groups, where they'll go into a particular area. It took us a long time to find this out. But there are actually areas they won't abduct in. They just won't bother anyone in these areas. And we're figuring they're using them for a control group. Come to find out, though, I've got at least three MILAB reports. So we're trying to figure out if these are isolated cases where the government is using this control group that the aliens are using.
Interesting.
So I don't know what it means. Okay, I'm just telling you what we found out. But
yeah.
It was just really weird because there's some null zones, we call them, in the United States. There's one down here in the south, and we use this to help reprogram contactees and MILADs, by the way. It works really well. There's a spot where you can go where, for that time you're in the zone, there is no telepathic communication whatsoever.
Huh.
The Greys, none of the aliens can seem to breach it, and as far as we know, the government had, and it has worked 100% of the time, flawlessly, every time we've used it.
Huh.
And we use it, we call it a reset, for contactees that have gotten, had really been pushing to remember a lot,
mm-hmm.
and we're having a lot of times dealing with it. It allows them to break that contact with the alien where it's pushing the information all the time, and it gives them time to assimilate what's in their head, especially after downloads and stuff. Works really well. Yes, people ask me all the time, where's it? I said, come down and I'll show you. I'm never going
to
say it on the air, though,
yeah,
ever.
We'll have to talk about that, because that's news to me. You know, and there are things just, you know, as much as I'm doing this, granted, I've only interviewed like 40 people in depth about it, and I'm familiar with maybe another 100 or 200 cases that I'm loosely familiar with.
Well, I think
some of those are people who have written and gone real public with their experiences, and maybe I just haven't done an in-depth interview of. And some, you know, and some people who've gone very public.
But I think you're right about the one.
But you, my point being, you've worked with more people with this, so you might have more specific patterns than I've seen in my research, or I flat out haven't come across, just because you're working with more people.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I use you and Melinda Leslie, you and Yvonne Smith and Katarina Wilson and Jim Sparks and Suzanne Hansen and Mary Rowell. I use y'all as checks. I'm not even going to lie about it.
Yeah.
See, this is a check and balance system for me. I go, okay, this is the data we have. Now, these are all people working in specific areas that we're all working in, stuff that we cover, along with David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and them. And, you know, so what I can do is I can go back and say, okay, I found this is what I think. Then I can go back across all of y'all or bring you on the show and ask you directly.
Mm-hmm.
And what it allows me to do is verify what I already know or make me stop and say, well, wait, you know, these four haven't come up with this, and since they're working in the same, something's not right. So it allows me to go back and relook before going public with it. And to me, it's a great thing. I'm not even going to lie, so I'm glad all y'all are out there. I was so happy. I'm going to be honest with you, because my first year doing radio, I was kind of like, and being involved in public ufology, I was kind of getting discouraged. I was like, man, I can't find any good contactees, any good abductee researchers. What the hell's going on here? Then I started finding them, so I was a much happier camper after that. But it's nice because, you know, I get the contactees now, I get the abductees now, we get MILAD cases now, we get all the researchers, plus the airtime to do what we want with it, plus after we do a show like tonight, I start getting rebuttals and emails, which helps me refine it more. So, yeah, I'm in a very unique position these days when it comes to this kind of stuff, but like I tell people, you know, there's no way. Everything I tell people all the time, I say, look, guys, this is where the data leads us, but it is still just a theory. Okay, until I can get Mr. Reptilian or Mr. Government guy to say, stamp, you got it right, I said it's speculation.
Well,
and it's good speculation, but it's still.
And my significance, besides having my own experience with this and that's one of the reasons.
Oh, I think you lead to feeling.
I'm real passionate about
modest.
It. But it's kind of, you know, it's helping to kind of bridge a gap that exists between the, you start off the show even seeing this, that you have the abduction research and the abduction community and the rest of ufology and the other subjects, you know, from all the political cover-up conspiracy kind of related subjects to the technical stuff, to the just the sighting report and everything. And they're kind of held as these, you know, separate camps, and yet they're not separate. And one real strong piece of evidence and indicators for the level of, you know, connection between them is this very thing that I talk about. And you as well, you know, this reverse engineering, you know, this military covert intelligence interest in the abductees. And that's why I started to call it the reverse engineering, because it's that basic.
That was an eye-opener for me, by the way.
I
really never thought of it like
that
until you said that on the show.
Well, you know, if you think about it, like, they retrieve crashes, you know, craft discs, you know, or craft, whatever they are, you know, and back engineer them and figure out the technology. And why do they do that? Well, they do that to learn about it, to develop it, to master it, and to learn about the aliens. Okay, well, let's go into to what they're doing. They're developing, they're learning about the aliens, they're mastering the technology, and, you know, and using it for their own purposes. Well, if the abductee is another source besides just the hardware, you have an information gathering system in the abductee's memory retrieval, you know, that of course would be of interest because they'd want to know, again, you know, it gets back to what I said earlier about what they want to know about alien motives and alien genetics and, you know, what is it about you genetically that they have an interest in? What do you know about their motives? What have they told you? What have you just learned and absorbed as a byproduct of your experience? What have you developed in psi? And then, and probably first and foremost, the part that they seem most interested in, the technology. Well, actually, the motives part, too. The alien motives agenda and their interest in the technology. Have you seen it? Have you had hands-on? Have you flown it? Have the aliens described it to you? Have they given you schematics? Anything like that? Those two things seem to be the most common questioning that come up in the interrogation session.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree with you. It always amazes me because we do have more cases than you do, but still. As far as most of the stuff we talk about, I'm going to be honest with y'all, ladies and gentlemen, about 80 to 90% of what we talk about, we agree on that.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty good for ufologists,
I'm
going to be honest with y'all.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are things we're not going to agree on, but, you know, that's all part of the research is agreeing not to agree to disagree. And
sure.
Some of us can do it. Now, there's other researchers out there that
well, the
act
thing
like
is, it's called moving it forward together,
yeah.
And I'm just so glad that I'm not the only one out there.
Actually, by the way, I refer
to
you.
Talking to the cases, that's giving them the time of day, that's telling them you're not crazy, you know, you're not alone, and listening to what they have to say and gathering that information. I mean, my God, you know, I would feel so alone out there, and thank God you're out there doing this with me.
Well, I told Richard Dolan, I always referred to you as the expert, because we were talking about Milaz one night, and I was like, no, she's the expert.
Well, he's a dear friend, thank you.
Yeah, but, well, no, because really, I've talked to you on a half dozen occasions, and at least three of those times you gave me something that I wasn't even thinking about while I was doing the research, which is kind of nice because it just, sometimes I want to slap because it adds more work, but still. and the backwards engineering thing was just a wake-up call for me because I was monitoring
the MILAZ.
Well, that's
why they're spending money on us.
You know, well,
you know, we have to be profitable to them.
Well, you know, I was doing all that research, monitoring, and never really thinking about them being backwards engineering. You said that, and I said, well, shit, this opens a whole new door. I'm going to have to go look into all of this. And but you see, it also helps explain a lot of what goes on, and that's the thing, you know, and making people understand.
And then the abduction community needs to say, first off, this is the abduction community. If it's about triage, if it's about helping the experiencer, then you've got to help the experiencer with this aspect as well. In fact, I think back. I'm so sorry, you know, John Mack is no longer with us.
Yeah, I am too.
But John Mack, years before he died, I interviewed him extensively, and he shared some case stuff with me. He had about 12 cases of this. He had more cases. He had another 50 or so with the low-grade harassment surveillance stuff, but he had about 12 of the re-abduction scenario. And he actually asked me point blank, and Danny Sheehan was present there, so I have a good witness. Danny Sheehan was present. And he point blank asked me, Melinda, what do I tell these people? How do I help these people? What do I tell them? And I'm like, you're John Mack. You're the chair of the psychiatric department at Harvard. You're asking me what... I said, what do you tell your abductees? You know, what do you tell your alien experiencers? Tell them the same thing. I mean, that I was floored that he would say to me, what do I tell these people? And the thing is, that was my point, is in the abduction research community, is be open to helping people who've had these experiences. Because like I said, and I said at that CIRO group, and all these people shook their head, everybody's having this stuff happen. Granted, not everyone, but if it's one in every 10 abductees, it's a hell of a lot.
It is a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
And I really think you're probably closer with the one in 10. I mean, I could probably sit down and do some counting. I got a bunch of new cases came in on the ICAR site the other day. I could go through and count as well, but I would feel comfortable with the one in 10.
Well, it actually
makes more sense to me that they would do it that
way. Someone early on is addressing their alien stuff. They're not maybe going to see this for what it is till after they've gotten kind of comfortable looking at their experience.
Well, because they just figure, because they see low-grade harassment, that, oh, well, they know I'm a contactee, so they're just surveilling me. They don't understand that.
But why would they even be doing that? That's my point.
That's
why?
The point. Yeah, that's the point. You know, well, some, you know,
the fact that they're even surveillancing you is significant.
And that's the thing.
Someone's
you know,
spending a lot of money on you for a reason.
Well, this was so funny. One of my customers the other day, one of my construction customers at one of my complexes that we run, they said they had heard I did this and actually went and listened to a show, so it kind of caught me off guard. They said, do you think the government would really? I said, boo, it's not do we think. I said, this is documented. I said, there's videotapes, there's pictures, there's dozens of witnesses. I said, get this, a lot of times they show up, there's, you know, witnesses, dozens of witnesses present when they show up. I said, this is well documented. This isn't a speculation or anything like this. This is a fact. I said, this is a fact we can't get away from. We know the government's involved. We just don't know what part of the government or who exactly is in control. I said, we just know that it's got to be part of the government because they have complete access to everything in our country. They seem to be able to move around without any harassment, any bother, no worry of local law enforcement or federal law enforcement. You know, whoever these guys are don't have to fear conventional law.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means they don't answer to anybody except maybe the president or not, probably not even president, it's probably somebody else. And but that's the thing. We don't know who they are.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's
a scary scenario because there is no recourse here.
You're right. And it's a shadow government out of control.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's
way out of control. And profiting from it.
Yeah, that's the bad part. They're profiting from it.
I mean, that's Randy Kopang and I am by the way, he says hello. Randy and I, you know, that's part of our combined research that I've done with him that resulted in the book that he wrote, Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure, is hello?
I'm still here, Gary.
Oh, okay. I heard some interference there. But what resulted in the book being written is the whole thing of what's driving this cover-up and how it's not really a cover-up. It's a policy of non-disclosure. And the policy of non-disclosure, the bottom line is, guess what? The bottom line. It's about the fact they're profiting from it.
Yeah.
And, you
well,
know,
you
these
know,
guys
call
Larry King, and Larry King asked point blank, why are they covering this up? Larry, because they're profiting from it.
See, I didn't even think about the profit thing. See, that's what I'm saying. Stuff like that, I just don't think about. I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing research, and I get focused in this one direction, and I don't think about it. So then you come along and say it, and then I'm like,
but is there a reason for
no, it's a good damn reason.
For their wanting to continually control it and put the spin on it is for their control. And,
well, no,
and what's driving their need to control it is a financial situation.
And see, that just caps up to what we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
It just it brings it into focus for a lot of people. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans probably been listening, oh, these two are crazy. And then you said financial. And well, maybe they're not crazy. You know, unfortunately, a lot of Americans think that way. But whatever wakes them up, I tell this to people, I don't even care anymore. As long as you wake up and ask a damn question, I will be happy.
Yeah.
It can even be a stupid question. I'll be happy. Just
I love it, too, when I talk to people who aren't into this, but at least they start, like you said, asking the right questions.
Yeah, I was told that, you know, for conferences, they consider me and you dangerous because we're liable to go off on a tangent one day. Well, I am. Look, I'm not even going to deny it, okay? I might even write out and draft what I want to talk about, but then somebody will ask me a question, and I might be on a whole other side.
You and I, you know, maybe I could maybe talk to, I don't know, Bob Brown about this. You and I should do a MyLab Rehab talk together.
Oh, yeah, scare the hell out of everybody.
No, but we'll just keep it very facts, evidence. Let's really, you know,
have it be
about helping people who've had the experience. Couch it all in that, you know?
No, we should, because
it'll scare the hell out of
you. Know, by the way,
it'll help a lot of people.
You know, I'm blaming you for my theory on Betty and Barney Hill, right?
Oh,
now. I'm blaming it on you. I'm saying it's because she told me about Mill Labs. It's her fault.
Yeah. Oh.
So when you start getting mad, you know what happens.
Thanks for nothing. No wonder I'm not asked to do. No, I'm just kidding.
No, they. Oh man, I still love driving people crazy with that. See, I don't care. I tell them all the time. Look, guys, you know, because the more famous ufologist.
Can I do a shameless self-promotion real quick? Before
plug away, girl. Plug away. Yeah, we're going to be off the air if you
well,
miss
this is actually plugging a conference I'm a part of that the conference is wonderful. It's called the Bay Area UFO Expo.
Oh, yeah, I like
it. It's in San Jose in September. I hope you're going to be there. It's
who's running it this year?
Well, it's always produced by Victoria Jack.
Okay.
And it's a great conference. It has all the top people in the field. For instance, this year, you know, just to throw out some names, Bob Dean is going to speak. He's been silent for 6 years. This is his first public talk in 6 years. Bob Dean, George Norrie, Ruben Uriarte, Paola Harris, Clifford Stone, Preston Dennett, Jose Escamilla, Jaime Musan. Great.
If you haven't seen
Jaime Musan's video presentation of UFOs in Mexico, my God, you've got to see this.
Oh, no, yeah.
David Icke, Stuart Swerdlow, Brett Loader. You know, it's just an incredible lineup. I'm thrilled.
You know, I've been thinking about bringing David Icke on the show, but I'm probably going to get in trouble with that.
Yeah,
I might
yeah,
that
yeah,
one
yeah.
I know. See, I'm
Meyer
smart.
Beware.
I'm smart. I know some
no.
guests I should just never talk to.
You know, I mean, people will enjoy it. You will catch flack, but that's your call.
Yeah,
you know, of course.
Well, no, I tell you what. Send me some information on it, or have the conference send me some information.
Well, here, let me give people the website. It's the end of September, the 27th and 28th, I think. It's that last weekend. I forget what dates. I think it's the 27th and 28th in San Jose. And the website is www.thebayareaufoexpo.com. And you have to have the word the in there. So, again, it's thebayareaufoexpo.com. So please, everybody, check it out. I'm giving a talk actually titled, it's an extended lecture called The Covert Ops Reverse Engineering of Extraterrestrial Abductees.
So that would be interesting. You're going to send me a copy of it? Yeah,
yeah.
I keep
yeah.
telling all these fellas to send it to me, because stuff like that, I'll throw in the queue one day and just let it play for everybody to listen to. It's because, you know, them mornings, I got all them people that's in the daytime that are... office workers and stuff.
And let me throw out there, too, should someone out there, you know, I've told people, contact me, and they're probably wondering, well, how the hell do we do that, you know?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
They
email
can email me. I can just see the emails coming. My email's linnie@onebox.com. That's linnie@onebox.com.
And she does answer emails, ladies and gentlemen, so she's not like
Please,
you where I tell you I don't
like I prefer
if
you keep them short, because... You know, it's easier to answer short ones.
man, these people, I get the damnedest things written to me sometimes. I'm like, and now, and by the way, while I'm thinking about this on the air tonight, okay, guys, I do ufology. Yes, this is the Paranormal Radio Network, UFO Paranormal Radio Network. If it's paranormal, look, there are at least 5 shows you can write to, okay? I would suggest Tuesday Miles and Angela Thomas, but there are other ones out there that work in the field. I don't. When you call me to tell me about your... I don't know nothing about ghosts. Well, I know something, but it's not what I do. I get all these calls about it. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm kind of like, look, I'm not a ghoster, whatever you want to call them. But I got lots of friends in the field.
A paranormal researcher.
Yeah, I'm not a paranormal researcher. I'm just not. Ghosts just don't do nothing for me. That's like a friend of mine telling me about ghosts one day, and I said, did you ever think it was an alien? He said, if it's an alien, I'm moving the hell out of my house. I said, wait, you're not scared of ghosts, but you're scared of air?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Joe, I'm not going there. He's just cracking.
People are funny.
And he ain't scared of nothing either. I ain't,
well, just, I'll let you in on a secret. I do that research. For 8 years, I've been part of a ghost investigation team.
Oh, that's cool.
Now everyone just is like, oh, forget it. She's just nuts. They just wrote me off completely if they hadn't already.
No, but, no, a lot of people, actually, that's
you know
not...
What we get, you know, we get, you're familiar with EVP, electronic voice
yeah.
phenomena. We record a lot. I mean, a staggering amount of EVP and good, clear, for those of you out there who know what I'm talking about, Class A level, clear sentences, responses to questions. I mean, we don't always get it, but, you know, right now, like if I was to go investigate someone's house with a group, we'd be disappointed if we got less than 10 EVP. We always get a bunch, and if we go to a well-known historical place or place known for a lot of activity, we ought to get a lot more than that.
Well, see, that's the thing, I never did understand why I didn't get into ghosts and all, because I live in New Orleans, which is, you know,
yeah.
you see a lot
yeah,
of hairy...
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, you see a lot of hairy, scary stuff down here. Well, because I got
know,
a lot
and,
of friends into
and
it.
And it was so. Something, actually, I was involved, you know, like I say, I've been public with my abduction stuff for 18 years and doing mm-hmm. my specific research for 15. Well, I've been involved in paranormal research for about 25 years.
Yeah. That's the thing, I got a lot of friends in paranormal, so See, for me, it's easier. I figure I don't have to do any research. I just call
you know, well,
them when I
you know,
see
it's
something
common,
weird.
Too, for abductees. In fact,
yeah,
Barry Capp, a well-known paranormal researcher, back when I was putting on a monthly lecture series, I had Barry come speak for me, and he gave a talk twice for me, actually, called Paranormal Fallout, which is that people who have UFO close contact, whether it's a close sighting or an abduction or a contactee experience, tend to have a lot of other paranormal stuff in their life, usually as some kind of byproduct of, you know, now whether they're open or they're pulling it towards them or their mind's just shifted, whatever it is. But that's another thing for abductees out there. If you've had a lot of paranormal stuff happen, that goes hand in hand with the abduction experience.
Yeah, it does. It actually does. Well, we tell people, like, if, you know, now this doesn't, by the way, what I'm getting ready to say, does not mean you're a contactee, but people with interest in vampires, fairies, things along those lines, it's like 50-50, half the contactees.
But I'm saying that, like
a
lot of abductees have poltergeist-type activity with objects moving, or they experience the ability with their own mind to be able to do that. I mean, that's common for abductees to have that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And we're still trying to get a handle on what that may be, if it's actually paranormal, if it's some kind of residual effect, or because there's a lot of arguments what it may. But
well,
I let the paranormal guys investigate
I'll give
it
you
right
my
now.
Theory, and again, you know, because truth is, I don't know, but I don't know. But my theory is, a byproduct of the experience opening up those other parts of your mind, like the telepathy, like the spatial time differences, and the cellular memory, like you were talking about, I think those expansions of your mind and that cellular memory brings up stuff that you then have, like Barry calls it, paranormal fallout. You have residual stuff in your life. Yes, it's paranormal, but you're now a magnet for it as a byproduct of either that expansion of your mind or a cellular memory or both.
Well, it's not uncommon for there to be paranormal stuff happen with contact. It's probably about 50% of them.
Yeah.
But you know, there are some ufologists working on it, but I know quite a few paranormal people that are interested in it as well. Even though they know these people are contactees, they're interested in it as well. So it's always interesting.
Well,
it's that
crossover point between the paranormal and the abduction research. Just like my research is the crossover into the, you know, political cover-up disclosure movement stuff and the abduction phenomena. These research fields are not, they're not standalone, you know, and they have to be considered with everything else.
Well, give me an email one more time and play the comments one more time, because
my email is linnie@onebox.com. That's linnie@onebox.com. And the website for the conference is thebayareaufoexpo.com. Please check that out. It's a fantastic conference. If you come, I guarantee you'll have a good time.
If you talk to somebody over there, tell them to write me, and I'll talk to them about
getting
their guest on the lineup for
advertisement.
Anyway, guys, we're going to have to get out of here. Next week's show is a continuing part of the series we're doing. It was going to be about an 8-hour series. It's going to turn into about a 16-hour. The first part of the show, I'm going to actually open up the show for questions about the shows about the Grave Prior. So if there was something I didn't answer for you, if there's something you want to know that I can talk about, I will answer those questions the first half hour of the show. The next hour and a half after that will be about the reptilians, but all of these are, the first shows are all to touch on, to give you an idea of what each alien kind of looks like, what you can expect when you're dealing with them, what kind of abductions you can expect. And then other shows might be a little bit more detailed, but remember, all this is going into a book where all the rest of the details will be put in. So that's what the series is for, but it's also so everybody can get a good handle. What I'm talking about with Melinda, that will be the second or last part of this series. Actually, Melinda, I might have you on for that show.
That'd be great.
Because this is all going into a book.
You know, Joe, I'll come on anytime.
I love having you on anyway.
Great. I'm happy to do it.
Well, I was going to tell Linda tonight when I got off with you, I was going to tell her to get you back soon, because when you and I get to talk, it's like a couple other people, there's just too much to talk about to get out in 2 hours. We're already 15 minutes into the next show. So. Kevin, look, guys, I know Kevin Smith, but you'll be on Live 365 in a few minutes when I switch us over here.
I apologize, Kevin.
Oh, no, I'm
sorry.
He's used to it on Wednesday. All the rest of the shows are real good about ending on time and 5 minutes early and all, so it's just me, but there's got to be some perks. Hey, there's got to be some perks to being a station owner, okay, if there's not Wi-Fi.
Joe's called being professional.
But he understands. He's a good guy, and he's another good guy. I've done a couple interviews with him. He's a lot of fun. Jerry's a lot of fun, too.
Well, I appreciate the extra time, because it gave us that little bit extra.
No, I wanted to get it in. Guys and girls, anyway, y'all heard about that. Y'all got Melinda's email. If you lose it, you can always go to the website and click on the Mail Me link. You know, that's the UPRN@cox.net. Most of y'all should have the iCar at Cox.net, so you can mail me on either one, and I'll send you her email, and y'all can get together. Because I'm going to be honest with you, unless I got free time, Milad cases, I will probably refer to Melinda anyway, because right now I'm kind of busy anyhow. because all I got to do is call and she'll tell me what she found anyway, so it's
sure,
kind of
right.
research by proxy, so it works out real good.
Especially if you refer a case to me, you
can. Oh, yeah, you know that. That's
unless
a good
the
thing.
Person doesn't want me to, of course. If
well,
you
no,
call
yeah,
and
yeah,
say,
yeah, that's
I don't
true.
Want, you know, whatever.
Yeah, if they say that, I understand that, too, because I'm the same way. But anyway, Melinda, I want to tell you thanks for being on tonight. It was great. I had a lot of fun. We got
Thank
a lot
you.
Of good information. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody, until next week, enjoy your life, have some fun, ask some questions. See y'all next Wednesday. And we are...